Hello coaches, it's Stuart here, the proud founder of Football DNA. In today's episode of the Football DNA podcast, number 4 of 2024, we are discussing managing player behaviour with Mark Lyons. Mark is an experienced coach and is currently coaching at Leicester City Academy. We are also joined by our host, Ross Brooks, who coaches in the West Ham United Academy and features heavily on the Football DNA app. Let's get straight into today's topic.
Hi there, it's Ross here from Football DNA, and I'm delighted to be joined by Mark Lyons again for another podcast with us. So, Mark, welcome to the podcast.
Morning, Ross. How are you?
Yeah, great. Thank you. Yourself?
Yeah, good. Thank you, mate.
Good, good. Well, we'll go straight into it. Mark, you've got a real broad range of experiences working within football. It'd be great just to hear a little bit around your background before we go into sort of the theme for today.
Well, yeah, I've been lucky enough to get a lot of different experiences, some good, some bad. But yeah, across the coaching pathway, so to speak. So I started off when I was young, just working with grassroots teams. As soon as I realised I was too fat to play football very well at a high level, I went into the coaching side of it. But yeah, I started coaching when I was 15, 16. And when I came out of school, I started getting my badges before I went off to university. University worked with some good coaches and learned a bit more. In terms of coaching some of the teams and just getting in around those coaches and playing for some football at university. And when I left university, I set up my own coaching business, just trying to get as much coaching experience as possible, doing anything, coaching, clubs, coaching community sessions, coaching schools, and just learning communication skills, learning lots of different bits and pieces, and how to deal with them and how to educate kids. Quite different things. More recently, I joined Leicester City about 5 years ago now. And I head up the Bree Academy there to kind of start kids on their next pathway and develop the coaches into hopefully full time roles.
Brilliant, that's great. And I suppose the theme today is around managing and dealing with player behaviour. So I guess probably across all those different experiences, working with older players and younger players, you've seen a whole range of different challenges, but also some really good examples of some great environments that promote really positive behaviour as well.
Yeah, some ones that invite some promote not so good behaviour. When I had coaches getting fireworks shot at them on bonfire night and bits and pieces like that. But no, it's you certainly learn how to deal with behaviour when you're coaching a number of different settings. And yeah, we've worked with some really good coaches. And even today, you speak to people and you bounce ideas off each other, and you're still learning even today. So yeah, no, it's been a real eye opener across the journey on how to manage player behaviour for sure.
Brilliant. Well, let's get into it then. So I mean, how do you go about establishing a safe learning environment? I think that's probably the starting point for anyone coming into your environment, of sort of setting those non-negotiables and what you want that environment to look like for not just the players but parents and staff to hopefully help create a really positive environment. How do you go about that?
So I think the first and foremost thing that I do whenever I start in an environment is I understand what's expected in that environment. So a new club or a new team, I get to know what is expected from the club and what the club's ethos is around managing behaviour and in their players. Then great, it's my own. And I get to go on values. And if there is one, then I get to balance that with my own and move my own values as well. And then it's very simple. It's about telling people what you expect. And I think that's a stage that we sometimes miss, is whether they're 5 or 50, they need to know what you expect of them in that environment. And the thing for me is I control my environment. I don't control anything else. I can't control what they do outside of my environment. And hopefully our environment has impact on their lives, but I can't control what they do outside. So I just have to make sure that I stay really clear in my own mind that when they turn up to my sessions or turn up to my environment that I'm in charge of, this is what they're expected to do. And it's really clear boundaries that players and parents have. And I have a meeting and a chat with the players in terms of these are some of the things I expect from them. And again, that will change depending on what environment I'm in. Sometimes I'll demand hard work or anything like that. But if I'm in a community setting, which is a bit of fun, then I might not demand that. It will change depending on what environment I'm in. But I will give them clear boundaries.
Yeah, and I what I've taken from that is a big thing around that alignment from the club, right? So sometimes you can be put in an environment and you have really high expectations and set that environment, but not everyone will have the same sort of perspective as you. And then that's when if they're going across different sessions or they're going into different parts of the building, or that inconsistency of what the expectation is from one person to the next can sometimes allow for behaviors to, and children to push boundaries and maybe cross the line too. So I think that's a massive thing. And you mentioned about sitting down with the parents and players. So would you go around the lines of having some sort of code of conduct which they adhere to or agree to, or is that something you don't normally do? How would
No,
you?
I think code of conducts for me are really tough. And I went on, I learned going on courses and talking to people helps, and working, being fortunate enough to work, going on an FA course, I learned what they do around, and it kind of changed my thought process around code of conduct. I always thought code of conduct, you need to have a code of conduct. They need to have set rules in terms of what they can and can't do. But then there's so many gray areas to codes of conduct. Well, you didn't tell me I couldn't punch the person next to me in the face. That's not on the code of conduct, because nobody thinks to put that down, because why would you? Like, that's just given. So I tend to set rules now, and I use the FA, well, I've got it from the FA, and just if any conduct breaks the safety, learning and respect of the players, coaches, and even the parent in our environment, then there's repercussions for it. So there's, look, we're all people that can make decisions on our own. The adults around it are adult enough to be able to know right from wrong, and you'll make decisions based on what you believe is the right sort of behavior. And the kids are learning, and the players are learning, and therefore they'll make mistakes with bits. So as long as they understand the boundaries of, right, that sort of behavior breaks the safety. So you've pushed a kid who's not looking at you. Okay, well, that breaks his safety within that session. So therefore, we're not tolerating that sort of behavior. And it brings them back in line, and they understand it. It's just about educating them. And believe it or not, parents, again, I mentioned it, parents still need educating, and coaches still need educating. And my thing is, align with the clubs. So, for example, if the club doesn't allow us to wear hats in a building, then fine, I'll follow that. If they're not bothered about that, that's not something I'm going to hammer the players for, because if I'm constantly hammering the players, then I believe it's wrong. However, if the club allows players to abuse each other in the changing rooms and they're not bothered by that, my high standards would go, no, I'm not allowing that. So therefore, I'll keep high standards. And again, that's respect. So it doesn't. So if I pick and choose to some extent that my values are higher than whatever club I'm working at. And if I could do that with the players, then they'll always be in a better position if they go to another coach who lets things slip. And luckily, the clubs I've worked at, that's never been the case. All my values and their values have always aligned. But I always have that in th those values in me to make sure that our kids that I hand over are always respectful and always trying to be the right sort of kid.
Yeah, I think that's brilliant. And I think you mentioned as well about, sometimes the expectations from parents might be different to your own, and that education piece being really important around that. So how they behave outside of your environment may look differently, but within this environment, this is what the expectation is of them. And sometimes, younger children or people in general will benefit from that structure and from that clear expectation of this is what you're expected to behave like when you're in this environment for these reasons. And equally, if you don't behave in this way, this will be then the repercussion of that. And I mean, how do you go around that then? So if someone's consistently breaking that safety, learning, respect, what would you do in terms of dealing with that?
Depends on what they break. I think if they break safety, then there's some more serious repercussions, because you don't want players being unsafe in an environment. I've worked with players before that have broken safety on a number of occasions, and it's understanding the background and the reasons why they're breaking it. It's understanding the whole context around what's going on in that child's life, because there may be reasons. There may be, and I'm not saying those reasons are right and justification for him acting out the way he is. It's not, but it just means that, for example, if a player lashes out because they've got a lot of stuff going on in their personal life that none of us have ever been through, and he's lashing out in our environment, removing him from our environment and putting him solely in that area that he doesn't want to be in probably changes his life in a bad way forever. Whereas if we can get him to conform within the boundaries by working with him or her, then that player will develop and still have an escape from their current life. which they're not enjoying. And
awesome.
I think that's really important. So I think the boundaries you set will depend on the context around the player and the amount of times they're breaking it. So I've had a player before that I've took off every single period because he's lashed into a tackle or he's reacted to a kid that's pushed him, so he's kicked him or whatever it might be. So I took him off every single period and sat him down. And then we'd escalate it. So, right, you're coming off, you're apologising for your behaviour. You were talking through what they've done wrong, understanding that they know what they've done wrong and whether they believe it's wrong or right, because that's key. I once had a kid tell me that he's improving his behaviour because he didn't punch a kid, he slapped him, and therefore it was an open palm and not as bad. And so sometimes the justification for the behaviour or the understanding it is difficult. So the rules and the guidelines will be set based on the continuous nature of the behaviour and also the context behind it. Now, there will come a point whereby I have to safeguard the rest of the players, and there is a line that I draw that kind of goes, okay, they've gone too far now. They're either going home, they're missing sessions, they're leaving the environment, and I can't have them in the environment. But it will depend. I think, it will depend on the context of the behaviour break, so to speak.
That sort of rings true to coaching, you know, on the whole, isn't it? Know your players too, and, you know, that understanding the context, understanding them, and there's more beyond what you see at the surface. There may be more stuff going on, and especially with young children, they are going to push boundaries and they're not going to be perfect. So they're not mini, you know, they're not adults, and even adults don't get it right too. So, you know, there is going to be that, and it is about education and understanding and how you work with others. And I, that was something I wanted to touch on today, really. Then, you know, if you find yourself in a situation where you're really struggling with behavior of an individual or a group of individuals, I mean, who might you go and speak to yourself? Or, you know, do you go and seek advice from others on how you might manage that?
100% seek advice from others, because they might have an idea that you haven't thought of. And I'll seek advice from within the club, with coaches in and around me. And coaches, so we're obviously working in academies, for those that don't know, sometimes you get the same age group coach that's working above you. So I'd go and speak to a guy called Leroy Moore and Brian Quayle at Leicester, who have been here years and worked really well with players that are managing difficult behaviour. I'd go and talk to it. So if I work in grassroots clubs and also here, I'd go and talk to our safeguarding officer, who has a different perspective on how to deal with, from their social work background or from their safeguarding background, a different perspective of how to deal with kids. I'd then seek advice. So I'm fortunate enough to keep in touch with a couple of what I would class as mentors, and I'd seek advice from them. And I even risked. So at times, as professional clubs, we get invited to go and take players onto courses. And one particular year, we got invited onto an AYA social block, which is working around the social aspects. And we took probably our most poorly behaved age group or kid, simply because we wanted to take him up there and talk to them and go, look, come and have a look at this kid. This is the behaviour that he's displaying. What's your thoughts? And Merv, who delivers the social block on the FA, unbelievable, just kind of gave us an insight that we hadn't seen. And it's solely around child psychology and the actions that they're... And we were like, wow. And so we implemented some bits and pieces on the programme. And I'm not saying he's now an angel and running around like giving everyone high fives and stuff. No, he's by far from that. But his behaviour is so much better.
Yeah.
He's just another kid that might get a tackle wrong now, whereas before he would lash out almost every session. And now it's isolated incidents.
Yeah, and I think that's a great point, isn't it? You know, going and seeking people's advice outside of your environment, you know, that might be able to give a different perspective or aren't as emotionally attached to what's happening, you know. And sometimes it can be quite draining as a coach, right? You're in the thick of it. Behaviour's chaotic. You know, there's kids running around everywhere and you're trying to get some sessions in and get some good outcomes of what you're doing. And
but it's
sort just
that as well, Ross. You know? You've just hit it. You're so sucked into it and you're so into it that you need somebody to talk to about it as well, for your own mental health and for your own well-being.
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess, Mark, going into then like actual sessions, you know, in terms of like dealing with behaviour in your sessions, then we've sort of spoken probably more around wider pieces. You know, you've got a group of children in front of you and they're mucking around, you know, your kids bouncing footballs, kids not talking whilst you're trying to speak with them, there's kids hanging off the goals, you know, all that sort of stuff going on. I mean, how do you approach it in your training sessions then? I know you probably touched on your safety, learning, respect and establishing that, but is there any sort of tips for coaches that can hopefully keep kids engaged and, promote really positive behavior within your sessions?
So there's probably three things, that maybe four. One, I'm horrible for the first 6 weeks. I'm looking for kids to go outside the boundaries, and then that leads on to the next one. So I'm looking for a kid to go outside the boundaries and making sure that I bring them back in, and everybody knows that that kid's gone outside the boundaries for this way, and I'm bringing them back in. And I'm not horrible to the point whereby verbally going in on a kid or anything like that, but everybody knows that he's gone outside the boundaries. He's coming back in. Everybody's fully aware that this is the situation. And if we don't behave, then this, you know, there is going to be consequences. That way they know that, and it leads on to my second point, I'm not giving idle threats. I'm not saying that something's going to happen and then a kid does something that's outside the boundaries and it doesn't happen. Because then what you get is a kid going, well, if everything's an idle threat, I'll just keep pushing the boundaries. Because I know what you say. I know you're saying to me that there's this repercussion, but there's not, because I've done it and there's nothing and you haven't given me anything. So I do make sure that any repercussion that I have in place, I give to any player in the group, regardless of whether I believe they're my best player or they're the player that struggles the most at the moment. And then it also leads on to the other thing of, if I try and promote positive behaviour as much as possible, I'm not constantly being negative to the group. So yes, absolutely. If a kid steps outside the boundary, he comes back in. However, that is really key. And sometimes it will just be, so-and-so, off you pop, over there, I don't want anything. I'm dealing with the players that want to be here. So then I'll deal with the players that want to be here and give them all my attention. That way, because you'll have kids that will behave well because they're good, that they've been brought up to, and they've been drilled by parents to behave well. You get kids that will behave poorly because of whatever's going on in their lives. And then you've got the vast majority of kids in the middle that will go wherever you give your attention. So if you give your attention to the good kids, they'll be with the good kids. And then these ones down the bottom that are behaving poorly will just be isolated people. And they'll eventually want to join in with all the positive stuff. So I'll do a lot of the, I'll praise a load of positive stuff rather than, and try and ignore as much as I can of the behaviour that I don't want. And if there is a kid that steps outside the boundary, he'll disappear for a bit so I can concentrate. Then I'll get the others playing. And then I'll explain to the reasons why he's out, why he's missed it, why he's sat out, why he's not joining in, so that he knows what he's done on, so he can come back in, and he goes back in and tries to replicate.
I think that's a great point, isn't it? I think if you're sanctioning behaviour, it's having that conversation around, when you do this, this is what it means.
Yeah.
And when you're not listening to me or you're distracting others, this is what it does for me, and this is the impact it has on others. And then it links back to your safety, the learning respect points, isn't it? That's then impacting upon your own learning and the learning of the group too, as well. So no, I think there's been a really good discussion. I think there's some really good points, and I think for anyone that's struggling with behaviours within the sessions, some of the things I've taken away from the conversation is, you know, get feedback from others, get other people to watch how you're working. They may be able to give you a different perspective. You're probably going to have to do a little bit of research and a little bit of learning yourself. Have a look, find some books, look at how schools deal with different environments, deal with behavior, and sort of probably the last thing for me is really get to know your players, understand what's happening beyond what you see, because there may be some wider things around why they're behaving how they are. They were probably the main things I've taken from today, Mark, on top of all the other really good bits of advice as well. So I really appreciate that, and you giving up your time this morning. So thank you. I mean, is there anything for you to add, or any sort of last comments really to finish?
No, I guess it just boils down to knowing what you expect and what you're willing to compromise with. I've sat here fiddling with my hands the whole time because I'm a fidget. So I don't mind a kid that's passing the ball, or as long as he's listening and not interrupting anybody else, I don't mind a kid that's messing about with the ball at their feet while I'm talking. But it's what's important to you and what you want, and just set it out early and stick to it. That's the other thing. It's just be consistent. If you're consistent, the players will get on board with it.
Yeah, no, absolutely. That's brilliant, Mark. I really appreciate your time, and you know, thanks for joining us on the podcast today.
Thank you for listening to the latest episode of the Football DNA podcast. We hope you found it enjoyable and gained lots of valuable information that you can take into your coaching for the rest of the year. In case you didn't know, we have our own coaching app, Football DNA, which you can download from the App Store or through our website, footballdna.co.uk. Go and check it out to find over 1,000 videos, including top practices, sessions, and full season curriculums from our expert coaches.